Repeat after me. Ha ha ha. gone. Just turn around and I'm gone again. Maybe tomorrow I'll wanna settle down. Until tomorrow I'll just keep moving on. Down this road that never seems to end. When new adventure lies just around the bend. So if you wanna join me for a while, just grab your hat, come travel like that's hobo style. Maybe tomorrow I'll wanna settle down. Until tomorrow the whole world is my home. So if you wanna join me for a while, just grab your hat, come travel like that's hobo style. Maybe tomorrow I'll wanna settle down. Until tomorrow I'll just keep moving on. Down. Until tomorrow, I'll just keep moving on. There's a world that's waiting to unfold. A brand new tale no one has ever told. We've journeyed far, but you know it won't be long. We're almost there when we paid our fare with a hobo song. Maybe tomorrow, I'll wanna settle down. Until tomorrow, I'll just keep moving on. So if you wanna join me for a while, just grab your hat, come travel like that's hobo style. Maybe tomorrow, I'll find what I call home. Until tomorrow, you know I'm free to roam.
Here's Kenny's house. And you get a kiss on the cold and gray Chicago moon, and that little baby child is born. And you get a kiss, and you get a kiss.
Hey, oh, and welcome to Abject Block Radio. In studio tonight, we've got someone poking the finger at microphones and shit and moving me around, so I'll just sort that out. All right, is that all right, Hesbeth? Yeah? All right. Right, so tonight we've got Avi Pichon, who's come to chat to us. He's going to play some tunes, talk about some of his writing, some of the projects he's been working on, things like that. There's also in the studio me, John Wild, and Tim Goldie.
Thanks for playing The Littlest Hobo. It's something I would probably play myself.
Pleasure.
Right, Avi. Me and Tim were chatting like earlier about like piece of writing you did. It's like the first communication of the Mythical Liberation Front.
Right.
Last week we had Stuart Omin as our guest, and he raised the slogan "Destroy Serious Culture." Mm-hmm. Your manifesto seems to be pretty much the counter or the opposite from reading. Do you disagree with that, or do you think?
Not necessarily.
I'll just take in a few lines. A demand sure. to cherish and protect the autonomy of the artistic realm and revitalise its most monumental archetypes. I don't know, it seems to be pointing to a very different place than, like, destroy serious culture. I don't know, go on.
Okay.
I just wonder if you'd say a few words about that writing.
Generally speaking, I reject the overtaking of the realm and infrastructure of artistic practice by political activism, which is prevalent in the last decade, even more.
Yeah.
It could be that initially, because of the, you know, crisis of the collapse of the Eastern Bloc, the political left was generally looking for new directions. Mm-hmm. Some of them interested me, some of them I reject. Mm-hmm. At some point, using the infrastructure of artistic institutions or galleries or publications or etc. Seem to serve an ad hoc purpose that on occasions was useful.
Yeah.
But I think at this point we came to a situation where art is disappearing and activism pretends to be political art, and by stating so, it obliterates art. And and for me it's important not because well, I do put art on a pedestal as a language and as a practice that is the source of all ideas, and as such it has to be protected. It doesn't contradict activism. I'm just saying that the two things should be separated, and I'm saying that as opposed to the common Marxist dogmatic dualistic view of the role of art, especially in post-Marxist post-modern discourse, it sees artistic practice as always context related and always related to power relations, and I vehemently object that. I think art has an existence as a source, as a an absorber and transmitter of knowledge, and art talks through us and not the other way around.
Yeah. I think this move to activism within art is definitely something we've seen. I think me and Tim have chatted about this ourselves a lot. I mean, I've seen it in my own life, really, from the struggles in the miners' strike and stuff to reclaim the streets. There seemed to... the political left seemed to have retreated from the economics sphere and retreated to culture, I think. And at this moment of economic crisis, I myself, I'm like, wonder whether or not it's time to leave the ideal of art and activists be actual activists and get involved in real economic political struggles rather than the kind of more the kind of activities that I think have less impact.
I think, first of all, activism is activism, and we can have a whole program where I will be discussing what forms of activism.
I think the next question I've got for you is: can you kind of give any examples of the sort of art that you want, that you intend, that you?
Yes,
you mentioned monumental archetypes. Just some sort of concrete examples of what it is you're protecting or putting on.
Okay, first of all,
and what you're rejecting, because art history has been full of a politicized kind of, like modernism itself is kind of fueled with that politicized.
Absolutely, but for me, the reason this division you're making between effective activism and non-effective cultural work is because this divide started much earlier. It started, as far as I'm concerned, at the end of the Second World War. And I think since then, the left, without getting into details, has been paralyzed by the trauma of... and the related taboo, the taboo which is the result of the trauma of the war with the Nazis, and what Laibach called Nazi Kunst, and that's why my involvement in the NSK state, which Laibach is the most vocal element of, is part of this realization that there is an entire sphere of aesthetics which have been abandoned by the left and as a result paralyzed and castrated it and made it ineffectual. So
at that point, I wonder, do you want to play some of the tunes you've brought in and stuff?
Yes,
and then we'll maybe chat about NSK and stuff.
Yeah, that'd
that
be great. I will start with a non-representative example of a compilation album I just edited for an exhibition in Israel. The exhibition is called Where To? And it concerned itself with forgotten currents in Zionism and trying to retread and revisit some utopian trends of Zionism that did not go the tragic way the current went. The compilation was an attempt to use monumental sounds and to pretend that nothing ever went wrong, and in that sense to try to rekindle some sense of utopian valor. Mm-hmm. Most of the album is kind of dark ambient, industrially actually quite melancholic, but I will play the track The Flower Said to the Butterfly, which is an old children's song reworked by Charlie Megira, which actually concludes the album.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of the narrative of our conversation, I'm playing Kasia, my favorite Rollo Tomasi tune out of the album Cosmology, and I dedicate this tune to Emily McMahon. We heard, we've been listening to Rollo Tomasi. That was for Emily. Hope you had banged properly, Emily. We're playing a live recording from Laibach's monumental avant-garde concert at Tate Modern. This is a rendition, a reworking of the song Tiki Tsivas, translated to English, You Who Challenge.
The big question that everybody is asking herself or himself apropos of Laibach, of course, is, are they taking themselves serious or is it meant in an ironic way? Well, I think, of course, this is the wrong alternative, because the automatic assumption of this question is that if your attitude towards a certain social system, system of social values, etc., is ironic, that then you are subversive. You take it seriously, you are a conformist, etc. I think that the whole point, the basic underlying premise of Laibach strategy is that in this holds not only for Slovenia but let's say generally for so-called late capitalism in general, even that system itself has at its inherent condition of functioning that its own ideology must not be taken seriously. In other words, cynicism, as today's prevailing mode of ideology, means that it is the positive condition of the functioning of the system that its own ideology must, by its own subject, not be taken seriously. An ideal subject today is the one who has ironic distance towards the system, etc., etc. And the reverse of this is that the only way, I would even say, to be really subversive is not to develop critical potentials, ironic distance, but precisely to take the system more seriously than it takes itself seriously. And I think that this is maybe one of the keys to Laibach strategy. For example, for the American public, let's recall a typical town in the south of United States in the 20s. We have the official white law and order rule, etc. On the other hand, we have the nightly dark side of it, Ku Klux Klan, beatings of the blacks, etc. Now, my point is here double. First, the transgression. There is nothing subversive in the transgression of the system. This nightly suspension of the rule of the law and order, lynchings, beating of the blacks, are transgressions of the system, but transgressions which are inherent part of the system. If you would ask an ideal subject of the United States, of the small southern town, where is your real identity? You can break the official public law. You will still be considered as one of us. If you don't solidarize with beatings of which Ku Klux Klan, you are excluded. So in other words, not only does every system include its own inherent transgression, but identifying with this transgression, which must remain unspoken, concealed, is the real form of conformism. And this transgression must remain hidden, unspoken. Of course, this goes for the United States. Here, in so-called real socialism, we had other forms of these hidden transgressions. And my point is that what Laibach is doing is precisely bringing to the light of the day this inherent transgression, which precisely in order for the system to reproduce itself, must remain hidden.
All right. That was Zizek there talking about Laibach. Ave, I was wondering, I don't know if you've heard that Zizek say that before.
Yeah, I have.
But he was speaking then still under the communist Yugoslavia. Do you think his argument still holds true for the present time and the current situation that we're living in? Do you think that argument about Liebrecht's totalitarian... Sorry, Tim, how do you say it?
Totalitarian.
Yeah, that aesthetic. Do you think that still holds true for today?
Yes, and not only it holds true, it holds true in different ways, in different places. And I can give you an example from my own practice, which was attempting to apply the NSK tactics, strategy, and aesthetics in the Israeli context. Mm-hmm. And the main reason I found it valid is because contemporary Israel is in a very similar kind of paradigmatic shift and ideological crumbling, which in many ways resembles the situation in Yugoslavia at the time when Laibach were the most effective. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons I curated the exhibition by the Irwin, the group, which is the NSK Department for Visual Arts in Israel. Mm-hmm. And at the opening of the exhibition, I recruited an Israeli performance group called Public Movement, who are basically using the rituals and the gestures of Zionist youth movement, of the Israeli Defense Forces, etc., mm-hmm. and create some, assemblage out of it, but it is definitely an out and out use of the monumentalism of a nation building. And what we did in the opening was basically a public movement were the welcoming committee to the NSK state, and we enacted a rally where the state of Israel welcomed the state of NSK, and we lit we had a burning Star of David next to a burning Malevich cross, and in the background we had the Israeli anthem Hatikva followed by the NSK anthem, and that was you just reacted by letting some air out of your lungs, and it was a very interesting thing to do. Not only aesthetically pleasing and enjoyable, and but it was interesting because it even, you know, the radical leftists who attended the opening, who would not usually attend a ceremony where the Israeli flag is flying high, because of this whole juxtaposition, they were lulled into a state of allowing themselves to enjoy the aesthetics of the ceremony, and that is crucial in my opinion, and that is just one example of why I think
to be to let themselves to give up the ego, as you wrote earlier, and become part of the wider.
Absolutely, yes, yes.
Earlier you kind of said things were not context specific, or things shouldn't be earlier you were kind of argued against kind of context specificity. I can see how what you're talking about works in the Israeli context, but I'm just interested in, say, Greece at the moment, where an organisation such as the Golden Dawn, which just got a number of people in the Senate, they kind of use this exact same aesthetic, but without the distancing and without the, like, as Zizek kind of says, the kind of bringing the hidden power of the state to the surface. They are the hidden power of the state.
Of course.
And it's becoming, like, they are making this visible, but without any distance. They are deadly serious.
Of course.
Like, when they don't sort of deny the Holocaust, they would like to repeat it. Does the use of an organisation like the Golden Dawn make it difficult to use this kind of strategy within that context, do you think? Like,
on the contrary, my position is that I won't go into the specifics of the Greek situation because generally speaking, I think part of the reason that all those neo-Nazi groups were simmering under the surface for several decades, and now because we have another economical crisis, they're rising to the surface, again, has a lot to do with an entire aesthetic discourse that the left has abandoned, and abandoned to the extent of the extremity of it would be the delusion that you need to disseminate logical arguments in order to convince people that you're on the right side, and your agenda would lead to a better solution. And I think rational reasoning never, ever, ever worked in the history of modern times. And because the left which wasn't always like that. It started this process after the Second World War. And again, to begin with, it was justifiable because it was indeed an open wound, and it's still an open wound, and it's a traumatic thing for many people. But the result is an entire aesthetic discourse, a populist, propagandist discourse, which is handed over for free to the right wing. So I'm not surprised by what happens in Greece. And I think, I mean, then again, we must not forget that, you know, the anarchists and the radical left are also pretty powerful. No,
I was speaking about the totalitarian aesthetic.
Generally speaking, we need to catch up. The left need to catch up with some monumental mobilizing aesthetics. Okay.
On that, do you want to play some more tunes?
Of course. I think what would be appropriate now... Okay, I will play... I forgot to mention that the female vocalist on the Laibach tune we heard was by Mina Spila, and that song was dedicated to her. And I'm going to play a track... by Anat Ben David, which kinds of harks back to modernism with some quotes related to the Dada movement. And I will follow that by a couple of, let's say, not particularly liberal democratic musical outfits that... maybe demonstrate the range of the use of monumental aesthetics sometimes in ways that personally I would not approve. So Laibach, you know, it's not... Laibach has a very unique position there, but let's start with Anat.
Progress, law, morals, and all other magnificent qualities that various very intelligent people have discussed in so many books, in order finally to say that even so, everyone has danced according to his own personal boom boom, and that he's right about his boom boom.
Here we go!
Dada, the abolition of memory. Dada, the abolition of archaeology. Dada, the abolition of prophets.
We are happy, we are fine, it's A-okay. In this town there are no problems, there is no crime, it's A-okay. In this town.
Everyone dances to his own personal bumbo. Everyone dances to his own personal bumbo.
It's A-okay in this town.
irrelevance is life.
Ljóðs bíð ek alla, helgar kindir, meiri ok minni, mógu heimdala, viltu at ek valfóður vel fyrtelja, forns bjól fyrra, þá fremst of man.
You're a Jew.
Shut your goddamn Jew mouth.
Good job, Jew.
Jew. Shut Jew. You're a Jewish.
Dude is Jewish.
Jew.
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 I told you Jewish people don't have rhythm. F*** off, Carbon.
We've listened to the intro bit to Burzum's latest album, Skidpaw. Followed by an interesting comment from Mr. Eric Hartman. We're now listening to a cover version of the song Santa Sangre by Alle Seelen.
Santa Sangre, Santa Sangre. Santa Sangre, Santa Sangre.
Heiliges Blut. Heiliges Blut. Heiliges Blut.
Santa Sangre, Santa Sangre. Santa Sangre, Santa Sangre.
Heiliges Blut, heiliges Blut. Heiliges Blut.
Santa Sangre, Santa Sangre. Santa Sangre, Santa Sangre.
To fortify and enrich our discussion of totalitarian aesthetics in music, I will now play a song by a band who I would say, let's say they're not liberal Democrats. The band is called Triari from Berlin, and the title of their track is The Inevitable Farewell of Democracy.
Thank you.
Okay, that was Triari, not getting a lot of airplay in their hometown of Berlin. To counter this attack on democracy, I will conclude by playing four songs, two each, of two of my favorite Israeli punk hardcore bands. We'll get two songs by Mess, and another two songs by a band called Not On Tour. So let's just get rolling, and goodbye and thanks, and hopefully I'll be back again and I won't be late into the studio.
Well, thanks a lot for coming in and joining us. And
thanks.
Fuck off, overproduced by Martin Hannett, take four.